You're listening to Strong Runner Chick Radio, where our goal is to educate, empower, and connect female distance runners. If you enjoy this episode, be sure to leave a review on iTunes or any platform of your choosing, or share it with someone who might find this episode helpful. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the show. Special shout out to today's sponsor and the sponsor of this entire Health as a Foundation to Sports series, Athlete Blood Test. They provide individualized, athlete-specific blood analysis to discover your unique nutrition, training, and recovery needs. Join the thousands of enthusiasts, elites, and pros that have already used Athlete Blood Test to help reach their goals. Testing is easy. Simply go to athletebloodtest.com, choose your panel, and schedule an appointment at a conveniently located lab core. Whether you're running your first marathon or competing to win, we're cheering for you, and we can help you get there. Use code SRC15 for 15% off your first panel. Hello, Strong Runner Chicks. Welcome back to another episode of SRC Radio. Today, as part of our Health as a Foundation to Sport series, we have on Dr. April Dominic, who is a PT and doctorate in physical therapy. She's a pelvic floor PT, specializes in pelvic floor, and she will share a little bit more about all about the pelvic floor today. So we're going into all avenues of like pelvic floor and running and how this benefits us and what we should be considering for our pelvic floor and our health when we are running and performing at our best. So Rachel, oh my gosh, I'm like so off today. We're gonna cut that part out. April, welcome to the show. Would love to have you introduce yourself, and thank goodness it's Friday today. I need it.
Thanks for having me on. If anyone ever says my name wrong, it's actually always Rachel. I think it's tied in the brain. Like that's the only name that they'll mistake me for.
That is so funny. I don't know where that came from.
No problem. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I can tell you a little bit about myself and how I got to be a pelvic floor specialist. I currently live in Denver, Colorado, but previously I was in Texas, in Houston, Texas, and that's where I got my DPT degree. So I was in undergrad, I was a psychology major, which was awesome. And then I realized that I wanted to have greater changes across a long-term continuum. And I wasn't quite getting that being a lab manager for a Center for Learning and Memory. So we looked at the brain and the hippocampus and how we make associations like Rachel and April, just kidding. So I applied to PT school, got in, graduated from Texas Women's University in Houston, stayed and worked in Houston for a few years. And a couple of years into my career, I learned about the pelvic floor, and which, you know, we had a lecture in school, but it was just a quick, basically 3 hours of here's the pelvic floor and that's it, compared to all of our other hours of the rest of the body. So anyhow, I learned about the pelvic floor, and one of my colleagues was doing it, treating patients with pelvic floor dysfunction, and they just seemed to be having a grand old time, and I wanted to do the same. So I took a class, and then after you take one class, you have to be able to practice your skills with other patients, of course. And then once people found out that there was more pelvic floor PTs available, the wait list starts to grow, and then you never look back. So I helped start a program in Texas for a hospital system, and I helped start with the brick and mortar. And then I started like a satellite campus, and then decided that being in Texas for 20 years was far too long. And so I was looking for something with a little more outdoor excitement, and I landed in Denver, Colorado, and I work at a PT-owned practice, and I try and spread a lot of information via my Instagram, Revitalize Pelvic Physio, just to get the word out there, because there are so many people who come into my office to this day who have no idea about the pelvic floor and all of its awesome functions. So that's where I'm at now.
Yay. Thanks for sharing. I kind of forgot the fact that you have origins in Houston, where I'm just at currently, just visiting. I'm not moving back here or anything. like I bought a place and I'm committed. Colorado's great. So I'm glad you made this switch and we got to meet in person. That's awesome. I'm curious, like, how, kind of a side note question, but like, how did you have a class? Well, I'm sure there's like, how does psychology, for someone that's listening, not familiar with the pelvic floor, how does that relate to the pelvic floor? Like, how did you sort of have a class that brought those two together?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the class was less so during my undergrad with psychology, but more so during my grad school degree. So during physical therapy school, we had.
Okay. So you'd made the switch by then to PT.
Yeah. So undergrad was in psychology and grad school was.
Okay. It's like, I never heard about that. I studied psychology. Pelvic floor didn't come up. So yeah.
I will say it has been very, very advantageous for me to have the psychology background. In fact, I was one of probably, I think there might've been two other people in my physical therapy class that had psych degrees, and most everybody had some sort of athletic kinesiology, exercise science degree. But I think 50% of my job is talking with humans and learning their story and being able to listen, which I think my psych degree helps me quite a bit with.
Absolutely. So how did, my next question, how did running come into play? We always like to kind of get to know you as a person. Like, when did you start running, or were you in athletics, like sort of your interest in any sort of athletic realm, and then how that lends itself into running for you?
Sure. I growing up was definitely more on the musician fine arts side of things. I play the harp right now, and I learned violin, you know, just like when people took their extracurriculars in high school. If I did do a sport in high school, or if I was quote forced to, I mean, I love working out and I love being active and whatnot, but I actually picked running for junior high, but didn't continue it in high school or anything. And then I guess like in undergrad, it was just easy to go for, you know, the casual runs. And then it wasn't until 2019 that I ran my first half marathon, which I loved. And at the end, it was just interesting because I definitely still had some gas left in the tank at the end of the race. I was like, oh, I probably could have done a few more miles. didn't really pace well, but I'd rather be on that end of the spectrum than the other end. And then here in Colorado, once I moved here and figure out the whole altitude situation, I try and go on runs a couple times a week. And then, you know, how you and I met, we met through the run. And then I've always been into strength training as well. And I've recently started with CrossFit, which has been super, super great for me just because I love lifting heavy things. And I think it's really great to supplement, running with an awesome foundation for strength training.
Yeah, that's amazing. Very cool. Yeah. And I'm happy we met through running, through the run club. Very fun. All that. And I'm going to ask too how like strength and running and how those relate to the pelvic floor. But first I want to know, like, what is the pelvic floor? For someone that's never heard, they're like, what are you talking about? Can you explain for like pelvic floor 101 what we need to know?
Yes. Like, who is she? It's a great question. I think the pelvic floor is one of the most important yet ignored muscle groups. So I'm really glad that you recognize the need to share this with everyone, with your listeners. I think one thing that makes it one thing that makes it difficult for people to connect with the pelvic floor is that you cannot see it well, right?
True.
You can see parts of it. There's an internal and external piece, but you can't see it. It's not like the bicep or the abdominals where you can, mm-hmm. you know, someone says, okay, fire your abdominals. And then you say, okay. And maybe even put a hand on your belly.
Right.
So again, I think the pelvic floor muscle group itself is just, it's one of the most important yet ignored muscle groups. So, what is it? So it is a collection of muscles that spans across the bottom of the pelvis. So that means that it is a muscle group that starts at the pubic bone, which is that muscle in the front, and then it extends to the back where the tailbone is. In that, so front to back, and then side to side, it spans from one sit bone to the other sit bone. So it's actually in a 3D kind of format, it's a funnel shape. So it's kind of big and wider in the pelvis itself, deep within the pelvis, and then it funnels down towards either the vulva or towards the genitalia in males, you know, towards the penis and scrotum. So in terms of what it does, it's going to have like five major functions, and we call them the five S's of the pelvic floor. So one of them is one that we're all pretty familiar with, and that's going to be the sphincteric function. So when, say, you know, I just drank some coffee and I'm hoping, gosh, midway talking to Megan, I hope that I don't have to go urinate, right? So if I do get that urge to urinate, my body might close around the urethra. The pelvic floor muscles themselves might close around the urethra, or same thing for what typically happens after having coffee. Some people have a urge to have a bowel movement. So from a sphincteric standpoint, the pelvic floor muscles help to keep things inside, like bowel and stool and urine, until you're ready to release them. And we have function over that. So, right, when you go to mm-hmm. sit or stand near the toilet, you can open.
Already thinking about when you're on a run and you might have to go. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. The other functions of the pelvic floor, it helps to support the internal organs. So the way it's shaped, so I talked about that funnel piece. So in the wide part, we've got in a female anatomy, we've got the bladder, the vaginal canal, the uterus that sits above the vaginal canal, and then the rectum in the back. For someone with a penis, there's going to be all those things minus the uterus, and then they'll have a prostate. Minus the uterus and vaginal canal, they'll have a prostate. So the pelvic floor helps to support those organs when we do things like impact that might challenge it. So like running or jumping or coughing or sneezing, things like that. And then the pelvic floor also is an integral part of the core system. So it's going to help stabilize the trunk on moving upper limbs and lower limbs. So the arms are moving, the legs are moving, but we want to have a nice stable unit, and the pelvic floor helps to stabilize the hips while there's movement, opposite arm and leg movement. There's also something called the sump pump, which the pelvic floor, similar to the calf muscle, helps to bring back lymph fluid towards the heart, which I feel like not a lot of people know about that one.
Yeah.
And then finally, it helps with the pelvic floor helps with sexual function. So it helps to create lubrication for sexual activity. And orgasm is actually a series of rapid contractions of the pelvic floor. So those are the five S's.
Wow. All the things.
All in one. Air and breathing, which are not.
Oh my goodness. The pelvic floor does it all. Okay. Yeah, a lot of things. Wow. Well, I hope that was insightful for those listening on just kind of your 101. I mean, even that being 101, I'm like, whoa, that's a lot, you know, like there's a lot there. I think too, for runners, I mean, it stood out to me when you first mentioned controls our ability to go to the bathroom. I know a lot of runners have sort of the challenge with, oh, you know, I had to pull over and make a stop. And how do you handle that? So that's one area I want to make sure we dive into of like that function and how that impacts our running. How would you say, I guess, in general, like what role does the pelvic floor play in our running?
Yeah. I think it plays a huge role going back to the functions that I just described. So the support and stability, especially we know that running is not only an endurance activity, but it's also lots of impact, right? And so one factor about the pelvic floor is the types of muscle fibers that make up the pelvic floor. We have two major types of muscle fibers throughout the body, throughout all of our muscle that make up all of our muscles. But in particular with the pelvic floor, there are fast twitch fibers that come on quickly for that sprint, right? Or for a quick motion or a quick, I'm going to catch this ball, right? So like a quick twisting movement or even like a cough or sneeze, that's typically a quick action, not a long drawn out thing. And so in the pelvic floor, the fibers are about 30% fast twitch. The rest are slow twitch fibers, which we need for standing for prolonged periods of time or for endurance activities. They're just always kind of on at a low level. So the pelvic floor, generally speaking, has a little bit of tone to it so that it can help us stay upright, just like the calf. The calf is made up of a lot of slow twitch fibers to help us so that we don't fall forward. And then in terms of impact, I'd say the pelvic floor is one of the main muscle groups that helps to absorb that ground reaction force. So we know that when we run, there's about 2.5 times ground reaction force, 2.5 times of our body weight of ground reaction force that the body has to absorb in some way. And the pelvic floor is one of the main muscle groups that helps to do that for us. So in terms of running, and we might talk about this a little bit more later, but in terms of running, if someone has a really large stride, so their foot is way far in front of their body, then that could lead to 4 to 5 times the amount of ground reaction force. And the poor pelvic floor has to do a lot of absorbing of all that. So, if in a functioning pelvic floor, it will anticipate the foot strike. So the abs and the pelvic floor will turn on to help absorb that, almost thinking about it like it's a trampoline, right? And so it's you're about to hit the ground and the pelvic floor activates and contracts, absorbs the force, and then you're on to the next step. So it contracts, but then it relaxes in a functioning pelvic floor. And this is all happening in a without you really knowing it. But in a maybe pelvic floor that is weaker or overactive, so it's super tight or short, that may not happen, which can lead to urinary leakage, or maybe some increased urinary urgency, or someone with a prolapse who may have some of those organs that are falling through the vaginal canal that might cause some, you know, people might say, gosh, I have a lot of heaviness after I run for long periods of time. So yeah, I guess all in all, the pelvic floor helps to absorb impact and it helps to stabilize our trunk while we have opposite limb motion.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes me think of, you know, that's kind of on a personal note, but like, I know I talk to people like in high school and college years too, who experience pelvic floor leakage. And I'm also speaking for myself, but when you run really hard at the end of a race, it was always like, oh, the last 100 meters, there's a little, you know, it's
little trickle
maybe
moment.
It's unpredictable, but I just remember that being such a thing on my team of like, anytime you start sprinting at the end of a race, that's what seems to, you know, seem to occur for a lot of people. So I wonder what that is.
So I think a lot of that could be depending on the race time too, right? So if it was, you know, like a 1600 meters or yeah. if it was mm-hmm. like half marathon. So if we're thinking half marathon and you're like, oh my gosh, I need to beat these five other people in front of me. Your pelvic floor has been on and supporting you for so long at a nice controlled pace. And then you're like, I'm going to send it.
I'm going to send it. Yeah.
Send it. And it's like, oh,
yeah.
For that.
How does someone train for that? I guess like running more that way.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think basically training outside. So we want the pelvic floor to be able to do all of this for us, right? Without us saying, okay, pelvic floor, I need you to turn on right now, right? So I think training in the sense of, can you check in with the pelvic floor and what the status is during the run? So you'd have to A, in a static position, meaning not moving, can you identify your pelvic floor there? And because I think the hardest positions or movements to connect with the pelvic floor are going to be the ones where you're like quickly running or, you know, lifting something heavy in an upright position. Whereas lying down, there's no gravity pushing down on that pelvic floor. So in terms of training, it's like the body and the pelvic floor is very adaptable to training. And so if you, you know, do maybe like a 3 minute longer run, and then you follow it up with a, you know, like a quick sprint for 45 seconds, you're asking the pelvic floor to adapt its muscle fibers that are turned on, right? Can it quickly adapt after like getting tired out, I guess, from the endurance? So yes, just different
yeah,
drills.
Kind of experimenting with drills like that.
Drills and impact, right? Like, can you control the pelvic floor as you do like quick steps or quick hops or something like that?
Yeah, that's another thing I've heard from people is like, you said lifting heavy weight or jumping up and down, that can sort of be a lot for someone's pelvic floor. What are some other maybe like considerations and how people can better improve their pelvic floor functioning for running?
Nice. Great question. So I'd say looking like zooming out and making sure that your body is restored, right? From like the week. So making sure that you're not training and not putting the long runs right after, you know, a poor night's sleep or really mm-hmm. stressful kind of thing. Because again, every time that we run, the pelvic floor has a repetition. Every time we take a step, the pelvic floor has to respond. And that's one repetition, right? Mm-hmm. So we're literally asking the pelvic floor to work, you know, I don't know, 1,000 reps, right? On an average run or something, probably more than that. I don't know. That was a random number. but in terms of what people should do for working on their pelvic floor, I'd say, like we talked about earlier, can you identify the pelvic floor? Can you, in just like sitting here or however you're listening to this podcast, can you close the anus? Can you close the urethra without everyone knowing that you're doing that? It's not written all over your face with your eyeballs, like, you know, going up or like clenching or jaw yeah. clenching, right? But more importantly than that, I'd say, can you relax the pelvic floor? So a lot of my, we'll put, not to put people in categories, but for a general statement here, it's like dancers or runners mm-hmm. or that population tends to have a little bit more abdominal gripping, right? Just a little more tension than they need to have. And so can you relax the pelvis, can you relax the belly out?
Yeah.
I know our grandmothers were like, good posture, sit up, suck the belly button in, right? But honestly, it's more about the lengthening. It's about the quote reverse Kegel. So a Kegel, for those who have heard about it but don't exactly know what it is a man termed the contraction of the pelvic floor, a Kegel, because his last name was Kegel, of course, right?
Of course. Named after a man.
So a Kegel is basically a contraction or activation of the pelvic floor. So like lifting the pelvic floor, closing those openings, like we talked about. If you can both lengthen the pelvic floor, which would be what should be happening when you're urinating or when you're having a bowel movement, can you lengthen out and let that pelvic floor almost drop towards the ground on an inhale? And then can you, you know, exhale and gather everything up and squeeze again? So I'd say more often than not, I'm working on that piece, the relaxing and letting go, which for runners, if your abdominals are gripping quite a bit, and that's going to lead to likely less thoracic rotation or mid spine rotation. It's going to lead to less hip extension. So getting that leg behind you to push off. And then if you're gripping, then the pelvic floor just has to work like a ton harder. And that's again, going to lead to some, maybe even pelvic pain, right? The pressure we talked about, or heaviness, and then some bladder dysfunction. So back to your original question of how else can we work on the pelvic floor? I think A, identifying it, being able to work it in both directions, not just the squeeze, but the lengthen as well. And being able to work on it, I get my people off the table, my clients off the table as soon as possible. Once they understand, okay, this is where the pelvic floor is, they can activate it correctly, and we've released some of the tension that might be in the pelvic floor, can we get you into more functional positions? So like a hands and knees position and working the pelvic floor, right? Like a mountain climber, you can imagine. Yeah. And then after that, can we get you standing and contracting against gravity on the pelvic floor? Then can we get you to work on controlled jumps, like taking, being on a step, and then can you do 1 foot down and then 1 foot down to meet?
Yeah.
But controlling the pelvic floor.
Okay.
And then we take it to the dynamic pieces of light jogs or hops or things like that. That's the training period. I don't need you to be worried about all of that while you're running, right?
Right.
That's why we train. And then the hope is that a functioning pelvic floor will be able to do all of this behind the scenes for you.
This is all super interesting and fascinating too. And I'm wondering if there's anyone out there that's wondering, like, how do I even activate my pelvic floor, right? If they've never really done this. And when you say Kegel exercises, you know what I think of, right? We've all heard probably of, like, while you're urinating, you know, there's exercises you can do, but where do you begin with someone just to activate? And of course, I'd recommend working with a pelvic floor PT like April, but how do you get started if someone's on their own and kind of wondering how they do this?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think you're right. I think a lot of people do think, oh, I'm sitting on the toilet, let me see if I can stop my stream, you know, midstream, which I think overall, if you're to do that every once in a while, like once in a blue moon, just to kind of check in and see if you still got control of stopping midstream, that's okay.
Yeah.
But I think every time you sit down on the toilet, just doing that, not a good idea, only because if you're sitting down on the toilet to urinate, you want to let everything out. But if you're trying to close that stream,
You said runners have a tendency to already close up a little too much.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know if all the runners here need to do that all the time. I think it's funny because people can take that to the extreme, right?
Yeah.
Little goes a long way.
Exactly. So in terms of finding the pelvic floor, I would say you can even, like I said, kind of knowing where the pelvic floor is. A lot of people, when I ask them to make a contraction of the pelvic floor, or can you squeeze your pelvic floor, I get a lot of activity that's not in the pelvic floor. So, you know, like a breath hold, like it'll be like, and then that's their version.
Or ab clenching. I mean, you know,
exactly. Yeah. Ab clenching, butt clenching, right?
Oh, the yeah.
Eyes will kind of turn on. And the reason for that, not only is it because the person doesn't know exactly where their pelvic floor is, because no one has ever taught them, right? Because the pelvic floor doesn't exist in society. but the reason is that the pelvic floor is part of an integrated system. Okay. So not only do we need to identify, oh, this is my pelvic floor. It's kind of, basically down the midline. If you were to take the butt crack and extend it down into the front, it's that midline, right? With a little bit on the sides.
Yeah.
So can you, squeeze that in a more controlled fashion? We need to be able to do that and identify and isolate that pelvic floor contraction. But we also, the reason why people use those accessory muscles, or they like clench their jaw when they do it, is because the pelvic floor works, has like a indirect relationship with all of those other muscles. But if you're going to try and do a pelvic floor contraction, my best advice would be to first lie on your back. Again, that's not a functional position, but we got to learn somewhere where it's a little easier. And you are going to lie on your back. You might even grab your fingertips and just hook them on to the sit bone, if you can reach, if you have long enough arms. or if not, you can do it in sitting. But kind of on the inside of the sit bones, you can feel some of those fibers activating. And what you want to do is take an inhale through the nose, let the belly expand and rise, and let the pelvic floor, if we're talking about a vulva owner, let the pelvic floor blossom out like you were going to, if you've had a baby, like you're going to have a baby, if you're like you're going to have a bowel movement, you're opening the canals. And then on the exhale, you just let it return. And that is just getting at the inhale lengthen, exhale return. Okay. Runners and people who like activity and impact will be bored by this. But again, it's important. Yeah. It's important to have that aspect first. And then once you have that down, you're able to feel maybe a drop of the pelvic floor, like it's descending down into your fingertips. Then if you wanted to practice a squeeze, the way I train is I always still do that lengthen on the inhale. So inhale, belly wide, pelvic floor drops down. And then the exhale, you're going to pull the pelvic floor up and in. For a vulva owner, imagining like sucking a blueberry up and in to the vaginal canal while you exhale through the mouth. No breath holders, please. So inhale, yeah. Lengthen, exhale, squeeze, pull up and in, and you might hold that for a couple of seconds and then make sure that you return to your neutral. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, if they have an overactive pelvic floor or one that's super tight, will keep that contraction and not let it go.
Oh, yeah.
So we want that nice wave, mm-hmm. right? Or trampoline action where it's like you bounce, you go up, you come back down, and then you're back at neutral.
Mm-hmm. Good tips. Thank you. I feel like you're just sharing this wealth of knowledge and wisdom. I'm already learning so much. So right. I'm like, do you teach these do you pelvic floor courses? Anything upcoming?
I love education. So
this is amazing. So your patients basically get like a whole educational session in addition to their actual, you know, interactive
yes,
PT. 100%. Yeah. Treatment.
Yeah. Education. Yeah. I'd say like half of what I do. And
I love it. I'm looking at my notes here, 'cause I have a couple questions. We got a listener question just about like how pregnancy sort of impacts the pelvic floor and vice versa. So, yeah.
So pregnancy is one of those major events where, a lot of people, like we talked about, didn't even know they had a pelvic floor. That's actually one thing I want to say on this, is that anyone with a pelvis has a pelvic floor muscle group. So it's not just for vulva owners. Okay. So, people with penises have pelvic floors too, which is shocking to a lot of people.
We all have a pelvic floor. Yeah.
It doesn't discriminate.
Yeah.
when it doesn't work, that's when the pelvic floor gets a lot of tension, right? Mm-hmm. So times that it may not work. So you might not have great bowel movements. Maybe you're constipated, or you might start having this leakage. That's when we're like, oh gosh, what may be causing this? But a life event, a major life event like pregnancy is going to draw a lot of attention to the pelvic floor, because during pregnancy itself, we have an increase in body weight, right? And that's because of the growing baby and the growing placenta, which actually they weigh quite a bit. There's plenty of changes in the cardiovascular system. There is a lot of fatigue generally during could be throughout the whole pregnancy, but especially during the first trimester, while the body is essentially preparing itself to accept and create and nourish and support the child. And then there's a lot of different changes in posture. You might have a greater, we call it a lumbar lordosis, where I'm not sure, I forget what the lay term is, but kind of like a shelf that's created in the low lumbar spine.
And that's kind of arching, right? Excessive.
Yeah, I guess an arch. Yeah. Sometimes I forget what the non-anatomical term is.
Yeah.
And so all of those changes, and there's like so many more, and it pregnancy affects all systems, all body systems, but I just named a few. So all of that, what is at the core? Like literally what is between your legs, right? Which is supposed to support everything up the chain, the pelvic floor, right? It's the core, of the like pelvis, so to speak. And so with all that being said, for running during the pregnancy period, at least, you might find, oh gosh, like I'm a little bit, you know, my pace is a little bit, slower, or I feel a little bit, quote, looser, right? Because things are, again, changing, like the ligaments are kind of changing a little bit. The hormone panels might be a little bit different in preparation for having the baby and then afterwards. So things just might feel a little less stable is what people say sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important to continue core strengthening and maybe modifying the runs a little bit. Maybe we're not running as often during the week and we're supplementing with a little more Pilates or bar or anything like that. And maybe we're starting to add some like abdominal braces, like belly bands to help support and lift that belly up a little bit. Or there's also some compressive gear. So if someone has already had a baby and maybe they're pregnant round two, but they had a prolapse, which is where one of those organs may descend mm-hmm. down into the vaginal canal, maybe they are investing in a compressive garment that helps to basically support the perineum so that when they are doing all these impact activities, that can just give them a little bit of boost in addition to working on their pelvic floor muscles. And so those are some of the changes during pregnancy. And then I'd say, there's so much more. I mean, I think we could do an entire episode on that. During the postpartum period, a lot of people, especially runners or anyone who loves a certain sport, right? The first thing they want to do is like, get back to it. Right now we're still understanding and learning from a research perspective of when the appropriate time to return to running is. Of course, it's going to depend on everyone's specific delivery and where they're at in terms of support and sleep and diet and all that stuff, how many babies they've had, that kind of thing. So postpartum, what I really try and encourage is respect your body's healing process. So you just spent 9 months supporting a growing baby, and then you delivered it, which is incredible and so empowering. And then, you know, there's these societal invisible societal demands of, well, you need to get, quote, your body back, or, you know, that kind of stuff. So respecting that the body actually does need some time to heal. For people who have had a C-section, that's a major abdominal surgery that goes through 7 layers of tissue. And so being able to recognize that maybe you start off by just doing some breathing, reconnecting with the pelvic floor, then maybe you start with some, you know, glute activation, ab activation, if you don't have any pain or pressure or leakage, and then you move to a more upright position, right? And then you slowly add in impact and things like that. So I think a lot of runners are going to go back whenever they want, but they might go back a little too soon for their particular body. So if you've got any of the symptoms that I was saying, like the pain, the leakage, or pressure, or anything like that, then I think it would be wise to pause and go see a professional and see, oh, is there something that I'm missing? Because I don't want to make this worse. So
yeah, that's helpful. I've kind of heard the term like rebuild your pelvic floor post-pregnancy, and I'm sure it's not totally lapsed, but it sounds like there's some work to be done perhaps to kind of get to back to where you were. Or yeah. Okay.
And if you didn't run before, but you're like, oh, this seems like something I could start.
Yeah.
Same with during pregnancy. Maybe now's not the time to do like a half marathon if you've
never run before. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Any pelvic floor, I know you're just full of, you know, you've got like your Instagram has, how do I describe it? You're sort of like dispelling some pelvic floor myths on there. It's very interactive. Are there any top couple of like, you know, 1, 2, or 3 myths that you often dispel that we haven't gotten into?
I'd say the, we have gotten into this one, but it's worth repeating. Kegel is not always the answer. Okay. A contraction of the pelvic floor is not always the answer.
Well, can you do Kegels while running? Did someone ask that?
Right. Well, okay. That's a good, we should.
I'm not making fun of them for asking, but I think laughing at the fact that you, I mean, for anyone that doesn't know, April holds up these signs like, should you Kegel all the time when you run? I think I took that picture or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, you did take that picture.
That's pretty great.
I do. So I do. Yeah. Based my little sign picture, cardboard sign pictures off of the dude with sign. But yeah, so I think Kegeling while running, again, like we talked about, it's more of an automatic process, but every now and then checking in with the pelvic floor, maybe take a minute, right? And every third right, like foot strike, can you do an inhale lengthen and let that pelvic floor go, let the belly out, right? And then, and just kind of give it a little bit of a break and then move forward. That way you're checking in and making sure, oh, have I been gripping this whole time? Or can I let a little bit of it go? So not needing to do a Kegel your entire run. No, please don't. That would be so, that would like thinking about it, like equating it to, can I hold a 20-pound weight in my outstretched hand while I run? Like, you know what I mean? That would.
Thanks.
So that, and then I'd say in terms of the other myths, you shouldn't just be on the table. If you are getting pelvic floor physical therapy, you shouldn't just be lying on the table. That's not pelvic therapy. Okay. Like manual therapy has a place 100%, just like we would, you know, maybe mobilize the spine or work on a shoulder, right? Maybe do some manual techniques. I think it's important to know that that pelvic floor PT is not just lying on the table, because who lies on the table in life forever? You know, who's lying on a table or lying down? You should be training to whatever your sport is. It should be functional and specific. So if you're currently going to pelvic PT and you haven't gotten off the table and you're 8 sessions in, I'd be looking around if that's the goal. So, and strength training, right? You need to have the pelvic floor. We can't put everything on the pelvic floor, right? Your hips need to be strong and able to support the pelvic floor. Your abdominals, your back, like things have to be mobile and strong to help with supporting that. I'm trying to think of, and all of these issues, while they may be very common, they're treatable. You know, a lot of people, I know a lot of maybe moms will be kind of making fun of one another, like, oh my gosh, you're peeing while you're laughing, like, don't make me laugh so hard, I'm going to pee my pants, right? But for a lot of people, that's true. And they don't get to go out in society, or they don't feel like comfortable for going out in society because they're maybe leaking fecal matter or leaking urine, and they don't want to smell, you know, that kind of stuff. So just because you have it, or, you know, maybe people have unfortunately put you at the center of a joke, right? Having this, it's treatable. So don't think that it's something that you can't get help for, and pain with intercourse too. We didn't talk about that, but yeah.
Thank you. That's just, I feel like we could talk and talk. We could have a part two specifically for follow-ups and diving deeper. This was like the perfect 101 though. I feel like this just hit the nail on the head with pelvic floor. And I'm sorry we didn't dive into your own running journey even more. This was so educational and helpful. And I'm curious, I have a couple more questions for you. Like, if listeners are to take anything away from this, is there any sort of action you would inspire them to take around pelvic floor and running for themselves?
Yeah, I would love for them to feel empowered to have the tools to help themselves, so that if they have any of these issues that we talked about, I just quickly mentioned the pain with intercourse, or the running, like leaking, or the urgency with urination, or pain in the abdomen, or low back pain, hip pain, all of that is treatable. And if you're able to go see a physical therapist or even talk with someone virtually, I know lots of people are doing that in your area, do that, especially if you are someone who maybe has had a child or intends on having a child later on. My favorite people to see are the ones that I get to see before they have a kid, because we know where your pelvic floor, we know the capacity of the pelvic floor. And then, you know, just like, don't wait until something is extremely wrong to get a pelvic floor screen. Honestly, I feel like anyone can have just like you with your teeth, you know, or some other, like your eyeballs.
Yeah. Preventive care. Yeah, preventive pelvic floor care. Yeah.
Exactly.
Love it. Thank you again. Last couple questions. Like, one is, I'd love to know, just for listeners too, to learn more about you. Like, do you have any upcoming races or summer runs you're excited about? Or it doesn't have to be running, anything in life that's like bringing you joy or excitement too.
I'm just excited for the Colorado summer to get here. I haven't picked out any 14ers that I'm doing yet, but I try and do a couple.
Oh, any favorites for the listeners? Colorado.
I love Huron Peak. That one has been one of my favorites.
Gotta write that down. I haven't done that one.
Huron is it's lovely. It's one of those 14ers that's really nice. During the entire like hike up, you know, some 14ers are, it's kind of like, okay, and then once you get to the top, oh yes, love this. It was enjoyable the whole entire time. So yeah, I'd say looking forward to more outdoor time.
Yeah, great. Sounds like your strength training to build up for the summer.
Yes. Ready.
Yeah, that's awesome. Anything, I guess, what does being a strong runner chick mean to you? That's our final question.
Oh, I love that. That's an awesome question. I want to prepare my body now for the aging process. I want to be a strong runner chick throughout the continuum of life, right? So I want to be able to, as I said earlier, I play the harp and it's 92 pounds. And then the dolly is like 30 pounds. So I want to be able to transport that throughout my lifetime. I want to be able to continue to run until my body says no. So I think strength training and finding like a support group, like with the runs that you organize, and just I guess building connections with my community has been very helpful, and I want to continue that always. I think running is a great time to, you know, have time to yourself or time with other people and really appreciate and enjoy nature and just not be connected or linked to technology. So I'd say that's what being a strong runner chick means to me.
I love that. I absolutely love how more and more people are saying, you know, that it means, I've just heard that kind of echoed in different ways about being a strong runner chick means like something about longevity or sustainability or community or like something outside of ourselves, because it is, you know, about more than just us. And I think you really summed it up well there. And being able to run when you're like 80, 70, yes, you know, enjoy life. Yeah.
Get those endorphins running.
And play the harp. That's amazing. So thanks thank for sharing you. That. Yeah. Well, thank you. And lastly, what is the best way that listeners can connect with you, April?
Sure. The best way is going to be my Instagram. And the Instagram handle is at Revitalize Pelvic Physio. So I'm really good at answering any questions, anything you have about the pelvic floor that you're curious about, if this didn't quite answer it, or if you need help finding someone who's in your area. I love being able to connect people who, you know, may not know I have like these five options. Do you know anyone? So I'm absolutely happy to do that. And yeah, I try and put out as much evidence-based material and information so that anyone can understand and learn more about the pelvic floor and feel very empowered to have one and know how to use it.
Thank you so much, April. Really a joy to chat with you. And I can't wait to release this episode so more people can revitalize their pelvic floor. So thank reach out so to April. I encourage everyone, follow her. She's awesome, and connect with her if you're in the area and you can work with her. So thank awesome. You.
Thanks, Megan. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Strong Runner Chicks Radio. Do us a favor and leave a review in iTunes to help spread awareness and foster the SRC community. Additionally, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Strong Run Chicks.